The Chateau. In the morning, Hyacinth was nowhere to be seen. The light beaming into our room had no quaver of the unusual, but the dream of the kingdom seemed startlingly real today. Perhaps it was the memory of Hyacinth's cool hands against my face, pulling me in toward him. The ice of his kiss lingered, so that when I brought a finger up to run along my lips, my skin still felt cool to the touch. I lay there for a moment, unmoving, trying to remember all the details. Something in my heart felt strangely light and empty. What would happen now? What would Hyacinth do next? A sudden impulse gripped me, and I looked to where Vulfril lay at my side. He slept soundly, his small body curled into a ball underneath the blankets. A soft murmur came from his lips. I watched him, noting the flush of his cheeks. When I reached out to touch his forehead, his skin was burning with heat. For 2 weeks, a fever racked Vulfril's body. Every evening, he tossed and turned, his brow beaded with sweat, murmuring deliriously until he'd finally fall into a troubled sleep. Mama blamed the sickness on the fact that Papa had worked us so relentlessly for the past few weeks. Papa blamed it on the cold and the wet air. I sat at Vulfril's bedside and watched him quietly. My thoughts dwelled on how my brother had looked when stricken with scarlet fever, how I'd told him the story of the castle and then imagined the shadows floating around his chamber. The tasks I'd completed for Hyacinth stayed with me. I thought through each one as I watched my brother grimace in his sleep, dark circles bruising the skin under his eyes. Surely it was all a coincidence, the way Vulfril's illnesses seemed to line up with these vivid dreams I had. But I couldn't shake the feeling that his illnesses were linked to the kingdom, and to my tasks there. It felt as if my brother's fate and the princeling's and mine were all tethered together as tightly as a violin string. Vufril's hot hand pressed against mine. I held on to him and stared at his pitiful figure, his eyes dancing under their lids. His lips moved silently. Now and then they seemed to form Hyacinth's name, as if his essence was hanging somewhere in the air. But I heard nothing. Was my brother dreaming of the princeling? Was Hyacinth visiting with him secretly? A spark of envy burned in my heart, followed immediately by guilt. If I were the one lying sick here, I knew my brother wouldn't hesitate to stay by my side every evening, humming to me little tunes that he'd written, kissing my cheeks and asking me to grow stronger. He wouldn't sit in silence and allow jealousy to invade his mind. The realization made me tighten my grip on his hand. Would it change what I did for Hyacinth if I knew that the link between all our fates were real? I lowered my eyes, ashamed that I didn't know the answer right away. He was so small for his age, his body so vulnerable. I thought of all the times he would curl close to me for protection, and my heart softened in affection. I lowered my face to his and whispered for him to get well. Night after night, I returned to hold Vufril's hand and watch the shadows dance across his face. I stayed until, slowly, slowly, he began to pull out of the darkness. The fog disappeared from his eyes. He began to look alert again. He would wake up in the morning and ask for parchment and ink. The arguments between my mother and father stopped. My worries about the kingdom's effect on Vufril's health faded away again. And all of us breathed a collective sigh of relief. I believe that Papa must have felt some regret for his behavior during this time. He had worked Vulfril and me relentlessly for weeks, making us go over and over our pieces, watching us practice late into the nights, even when Vulfril shivered from the cold. His outburst at me over Johann seemed to guilt him too. While we waited for Wulfrul to recover, he told me that our audiences felt compelled to speak to me, that I was an alluring talent. Sometimes he fumbled over his words, grew frustrated with himself, and turned his eyes away from me. I don't know if it had anything to do with me witnessing him at his writing desk weeks ago, or if my task for Hyacinth had pleased the princeling enough to earn me a bit of luck. Whatever the reason, after Wulfrul recovered from the fever, Papa decided to give us a day of reprieve shortly after we arrived in France, taking us to visit La Roche-Guyon with no performances planned. La Roche-Guyon was a small commune in the northern part of the country. The La Rochefoucauld family had invited us to visit their chateau, and Papa never missed a chance to develop new relations with nobility. He lined me up with my brother on the day we were to meet them, and warned us not to mention where we would next visit, that the last leg of our journey would take us to Great Britain. Wulfrul found this a great source of mischief. "Do you think Papa will be angry with me if I do mention it?" he said to me. I gave him a stern look. "If Papa says not to do it, then don't," I replied. "You'll get nothing out of it." Wulfrul tapped his shoes in a rhythm against the carriage floor. "How do you know?" "I just do." I let the conversation end there, and did not reply when Wulfrul spoke again. I knew perfectly well why Papa would ask us to do such a thing, and the La Rochefoucauld family would be grateful for it, as the end of the French and Indian War did not leave a sweet taste in their mouths for the British. We arrived in La Roche-Guyon on a bright blue morning, up to the top half of a large hill where the road ended at a cobblestone walkway. It was a warm day, not unlike the afternoon when we had performed in Frankfurt, and the sun seared my cheeks as we walked, leaving a slight blush on my skin. It reminded me of the heat on my face when I had spoken to the boy named Johann. If he were here, would he comment on the sky, the river, the color of my dress against the sandstone walls? Would he take my hand in his, or push loose strands of my hair behind my ear, the way Hyacinth had done? I shook my head, embarrassed, and pushed my thoughts away. Lately, I had caught myself dwelling on the dream of my kiss, and wondering what such a sensation might feel like in my world, with Johann. I'd seen my father kiss my mother before, although he didn't put his hands against her face and pull her toward him. She didn't lean toward him with wonder in her eyes. Would kissing Johann feel like theirs, polite and distant? Or would it feel like the brush of cold sugar, sweet and wintry and intimate, from Hyacinth? Would it be something different altogether? Papa glanced back at us once. I immediately lowered my head, afraid that he might have seen my daydreams spelled out plainly on my face. The blush on my cheeks deepened. Madame Louise Pauline de Gand de Merode and her husband were already waiting for us. The young lady greeted Mama with delicate gloved hands. "It is a pleasure to have your company," she said to my mother. Her face looked pale and sickly, like she had just recovered from several weeks in bed, but I marveled at her voice, calming and full of warmth. Monsieur Louis Alexandre, a severe man outfitted with a long face, shook hands with Papa and spoke quietly to him, before nodding at both Wulfrul and me. I curtsied whenever someone took notice. Wulfrul followed my lead in this, thankfully, but I could see his eyes darting here and there, eager to explore our new surroundings in this foreign country, his mouth twitching with curiosity. "You will behave yourself, won't you, Wulfrul?" I whispered to him, when our parents began to follow the La Rochefoucaulds up the cobblestone walkway. We walked behind them, far enough to talk amongst ourselves.
"I'll try," he declared. "But I need to tell you something."
"Oh? And what's that?" Wulfrul lifted a finger and pointed up toward the chateau that we now headed toward, the castle that belonged to the La Rochefoucaulds.
We should go to the very top, he said. I saw someone waiting for us up there. I followed his finger until my eyes rested on the chateau too. At first, I didn't think much of it, as I simply did not recognize it. It looked like an old fortress tucked into what was once a cliff, with heavy brick towers and tiny glassless windows. It sat high up on the hill, so that from where we stood we could see the banks of the Seine River. I looked back at Wulfril. He only stared at me, his expression confused, as if he couldn't understand why I did not see what he saw.
We should go to the top, he said again,
when we stepped inside the keep's heavy doors. Ahead of us, Papa and Sebastian were listening intently to the monsieur, while Mama talked to the madam in a low voice. I felt Wulfril pull at my hand.
Do not wander off, I whispered to him.
My fingers tightened around his. But Wulfril would not listen.
I want to go to the top of the tower.
I took a deep breath to steady myself and tried to turn my attention to what our parents were saying. Wulfril kept his eyes on the stairs. They spiraled up and disappeared around the edge of the wall, partially illuminated by the child-size windows that opened to the river scene below. I could not guess what made Wulfril so restless. He was still a young boy, and perhaps today was simply a day of mischief for him. Without warning, Wulfril slipped his hand out from mine and darted toward the stairs. I sucked in my breath sharply.
Wulfril!
Papa turned to see my brother scampering up the stairs, and before he could utter a sound, Wulfril had vanished. He shot me a reproachful look. I curtsied in apology to the monsieur and madame, murmured something I knew they could not hear, and then hurried to the stairs myself. I heard Papa stop Sebastian from following me.
Let her bring him back, he said. It is her responsibility. At any rate, she will need to learn how to be a mother soon enough.
The words pricked me like thorns as I gathered my petticoats into my arms and ran. Again, I felt my anger shift in the direction of my brother. If he would only listen and do what he was told, Papa wouldn't feel the need to say such things. The stairs were high and slanted and old, crumbling in some places, the middle of each step worn down into curves from centuries of travelers. My shoes tapped a rhythm against the stones that began to sound like the beginning of a melody. I called out for Wulfril again. Somewhere ahead, I could hear his footsteps, but they were very far away now.
Anril!
His small voice called back down to me. He sounded like a muted violin.
Hurry, won't you?
Come back down immediately, I shouted up to him.
But Hyacinth told me I should come up here. Don't you want to join me?
I froze. Hyacinth had told him. Immediately, I thought back to the mornings when my brother would wake with a dazed look on his face, as if he'd had dreams he couldn't explain. I remembered the way his eyes would dart about under their lids in his feverish sleep. I looked up at the winding stairs. A faint presence of music hung in the air, reaching out from another world. A tremor shook through me, and suddenly I felt afraid. What had Hyacinth been telling him that he had not told me?
Wulfril!
I called again, finding new strength in my fear. The stairs continued on. Now and then, as I passed a window, I would catch a glimpse of the bottom of the hill and the moat and the river, and see patches of sky and sunlight. The scene was very familiar to me, and I began to slow down so that I could better see the view at the next window. My shoes rubbed against something slippery. When I looked down, I noticed that some of the steps were wet now, as if fresh from a rainstorm. I climbed. Higher and higher. My breaths began to come in gasps, and yet still I could not hear Wulfril answer my calls. My irritation grew. I told myself that I would not sit with him at practice tomorrow to punish him, and that when he would ask me for help in his compositions, I would refuse. Wulfril would not remember what he did to me, though.
He would simply pout at me later and ask why I did not care for him anymore. I paused by a window to rest, careful not to sit on the wet parts of the stairs. Outside, I could hear the wind in the trees and the sounds of the river, but they seemed distant too, as if everything in the world was far away from the stairs that I sat on. I gazed out the window, lost for a moment in my thoughts. A melody floated in the breeze and disappeared before I could fully grasp it. That was when I first noticed it. The sky had grown a little darker, a scarlet tint to the clouds, and the rush of the river suddenly seemed very loud. The moat looked wider than I remembered. The window grew smaller, and I leaned back, suddenly afraid that it would close around my head. Through the shrinking opening, I thought I saw a dark figure float around the base of the keep, shrouded in black tatters and shapeless. My hands started to tremble. The chateau no longer looked like a chateau at all. It had become the castle on the hill. When I looked out the window again, I could see someone waiting on the other side of the river. The water appeared dark now, its bottom indistinguishable from the murky depths, and strange shadows glided under its surface, fragments of a massive creature with a long tail. The figure on the other side of the river was Hyacinth. Even from here, I could tell that he looked different. He had grown even taller, white bleeding into his skin like winter stripping the color from a tree, and his glowing blue eyes fixed on me with such intensity that I drew back from the window to catch my breath. When I shifted, my foot brushed past a cluster of edelweiss growing at the base of one step. I looked back up the stairs. The flowers had appeared everywhere, surrounded by sprouts of grass. I swallowed hard. "Vufril," I whispered, knowing that he could not hear me. Something called my name from outside the window.
"Fräulein. Fräulein."
It was Hyacinth, and his sweet, wild, savage voice. The kiss on my lips turned cold again. I trembled and did not reply, although a part of me yearned hungrily for his presence.
"My darling Fräulein," he said. "It is time. We have done what we needed. Now you must use the treasures you have fetched for me."
My breaths had turned very rapid, and when I looked back out through the window, I could see his arm extended out in my direction. He was too far away for me to see his features, but I knew he was smiling. "You never told me you were talking to Vulfril," I finally said. He shook his head.
"I do not speak alone to your brother," he replied.
A lie, I thought. I could hear it in the air. "What are you telling him? What do you want with him?" Hyacinth tilted his head at me.
"What's this? Are you questioning me?"
He laughed a little and opened his arms.
"I am your guardian, as I always have been. Come now. Our next task approaches. I must take the next step in helping you achieve your immortality."
I watched him, wary, unsure of everything. Perhaps Vulfril is the one teasing me, lying to me about Hyacinth. "What is the next task?" I decided to ask. Hyacinth nodded toward the giant creature swimming through the river, its fins black and gleaming.
"The river that surrounds my castle has been poisoned by a monster that now patrols its depths. The golden arrow you retrieved for me is the only weapon capable of penetrating its scales."
The crossbow I had taken from within the rock pillars was already in my hands. The events of the night came back to me in a rush. "How do you know this?" I whispered,
clutching the crossbow's handle until my knuckles turned white.
Because, Hyacinth replied, fear in his voice, it has struck me before.
And when I looked back at the arrow notched in the weapon, I noticed the blood on its tip, black and dried. Down in the river below, the monster spun and its fins flipped, roiling the water. My brother called for me from somewhere far away. I hoisted the crossbow, resting it against the window ledge, and pointed it toward the moving creature. My hands wouldn't stop trembling. I had never so much as crushed a bug in my life, and now my fingers froze, refusing to fulfill Hyacinth's request.
If you wait too long, you will miss your chance, Hyacinth said, his voice traveling on the wind.
The scarlet sky made it difficult for me to see where the monster was swimming. I bit my lip and waited. A strange force was holding me back, the deep part of my thoughts that knew something I did not. And as I waited there, I felt my mind cloud. The sky was too scarlet, or Hyacinth was smiling too broadly. I could not remember what my first wish was that had drawn the princeling to me. Wait, I heard myself say in a small voice. Give me time, I need to think. There was a silence. Then, Hyacinth tilted his head at me.
What do you need to think about? I have our sword with which we can cut through the thorns on the other side of the river. You have the crossbow so that the river can become passable.
What was the nightflower's thorns for? Why did the crossbow and sword exist? Who had the ogre been? What was Hyacinth telling Wulfril? The questions mounted in my mind one by one until I could hear nothing but their roar. I thought of the black thorns that wrapped around the kingdom's crumbling castle on the hill, the young queen that never returned.
Are you still waiting, my Fräulein?
Hyacinth said. His voice was still gentle, still amused, but now I could hear an undercurrent of impatience there.
What is it that has you frozen?
My throat suddenly felt very dry. I thought of Wulfril's fever, every worry I had had of the link between us and Hyacinth. Do you know why my brother has been ill? I asked. A pause. A sharp, off-pitch note disrupted the music in the air. When Hyacinth spoke again, he sounded offended.
You think I am responsible for harming your brother?
The accusation in his voice was so piercing that I instantly regretted my question. Of course Hyacinth would never do such a thing. I'm sorry, I stammered, more confused than ever. I just don't understand. Wulfril has been sick lately, often when I speak of the kingdom or come to you to finish my tasks. Sometimes he looks dazed or appears to whisper your name in his sleep. This time Hyacinth was silent. His face stayed turned up to me. The music that hummed around me turned sharp, unsettling.
What a shame,
came his reply at last. Now his voice sounded cold, even sad.
I am here to help you, to answer your secret wish. And you will not help me. Not after all you've already done, after all I've done for you, and for what? Because of these small coincidences. A dream that your brother had. Because you think I am doing something to hurt him?
He let out a laugh.
Surely I have served you well up until now. You do not trust me, Fräulein. And you still, even now, continue to think only of Wulfril. But what of yourself? What of your immortality? What has he ever done for you?
My hands began to shake violently. I did not know what to say in return. A great fear had risen in my chest.
Hyacinth seemed to look straight at me.
"Are you unhappy with me, Fräulein?" he said.
I stayed silent, the ghost of his kiss freezing my lips closed.
"Hyacinth! Hyacinth!"
came the whisper from his fairies. I had not noticed their blue light filling the dark corridor behind me, their teeth sharp against my ankles. The memory came back to me of my mother and I in the marketplace, when she had pointed toward the flowers and I'd brushed my hands against their clustered blooms. "Hyacinths are the harbinger of spring and life," she had said, "but they are also poisonous." I trembled at the words.
"I have lost my patience. Come and help me cross this moat," he repeated.
The sky looked very dark now, scarlet as the wine I had held in my painting. I opened my mouth to agree to help him, but nothing came out. The words lodged in my throat, held back by the eternal sense that something seemed very wrong.
"Please," I finally whispered, "if you just let me think for a moment, if you will just answer my questions."
My words trailed off. I waited, frightened for Hyacinth's reply, knowing that I must certainly have angered him. But no reply came. Finally, I inched myself closer to the window and peered out toward the river below. My heart sank. He was gone. It took me another moment to realize that the crossbow had vanished too. My shoulders sagged. My hand came up to rest against my chest, and there I felt the sharp hollow of his absence. Why did I hesitate? I had been so faithful up until now, and he had indeed been faithful in return. Hadn't he? Why would he lie about visiting Wulfril in his dreams? I bit my lip, regretting what I'd done, loathing myself. In all this time, Hyacinth had been the one who'd appeared to me in my most troubled moments. Had he just lost his faith in me? The tasks I'd done, all for nothing. He had promised to answer my wish. What would happen now? How could I ever hope to be remembered for anything without him? A surge of panic hit me. If he had been good to me in his content moments, what could he do now that I had upset him? I dragged myself back to my feet and continued up the stairs, careful not to fall in the dim light. I had to find my brother. The tower seemed more frightening now that I had trouble seeing my way, and the strange shadows that twisted and molded on the stairs made me quicken my steps. The music in the air sounded wrong. I did not dare look out the window again. I was too afraid to see the dark, hooded figures floating near the bottom of the keep, or worse, Hyacinth on the inside bank of the moat, running toward the tower to find me.
"Wulfril!"
I called out again. At the bottom of the stairs would be our parents, I told myself, and the Madame and Monsieur. If they were near, then the kingdom would disappear again and leave me in peace.
"Wulfril!"
What if Hyacinth had taken Wulfril? And suddenly the terror of it flooded me, the thought that I might reach the top of the stairs and find no boy at all, no sign that Wulfril had ever been there. Finally, I heard tiny footsteps echoing against the wall, hurrying toward me from farther up the stairs. My heart jerked in relief.
"Nannerl!"
Then I saw him, his hair tousled and his shoes stained with dirt, hurrying down the stairs as fast as his small legs would allow. He kept one hand pressed against the side of the wall. I waited until he reached me, then grabbed his hand tightly and began to head down the stairs.
"How dare you run away in front of Papa and Mama?" I said breathlessly.
My fear had overwhelmed me, and it emerged as anger.
"How dare you pull away from me like that right before our guests?"
"I wanted to see the top of the tower," Wulfril repeated, bewildered at my temper.
He glanced over his shoulder, back up to where the stairs vanished into darkness.
I heard her, Nonril. Someone locked away at the top of the castle. Hyacinth said it is the princess. I wanted to show you.
Hyacinth said. The young princess trapped in the castle's highest tower. I opened my mouth to speak, and nothing came out. Only the silence that now roared in my hollow chest. So, Vufril did speak alone with the princeling. Hyacinth was whispering to him. What was Hyacinth doing? Why wasn't he telling me the truth? What was he saying to my brother in his dreams when I was not there to hear it? I grabbed Vulfril's arm. Tell me what Hyacinth has been saying to you, I demanded. He tugged against my grip.
He asked me if I liked being in the kingdom.
There was more than that, I could sense it, but my brother either didn't want to tell me or didn't seem aware of it.
Vufril, stop, I insisted. We are not going up there. But Hyacinth wants us to go.
You shouldn't listen to everything he says.
My words were hushed, as if fearful that the princeling would hear them. At that, Vufril gave me an incredulous look.
But I trust him, Nonril. Why don't you?
He was so genuine in his words that it sent a chill down my spine. How frequently had Hyacinth been visiting him? I thought of the spark of envy I had felt at Vulfril's bedside, followed by my deep guilt. Now the two emotions tugged again in my chest, coupled with fear. I swallowed, looking up again at the dark steps rising above us, dreading the sight of a slender silhouette. I'm trying to keep you safe, I told my brother.
Of course it's safe, he argued.
Let's go, I said firmly.
But I heard her up there!
No, you didn't, I said when I found my voice again. Only the voice I found was a hoarse scrape of my own.
Yes, I did, Vufril protested.
His hand began to squirm out of mine again, but I grimly held on.
You didn't see anything and you didn't hear anything.
My voice grew louder, more frightened. Hyacinth's words rang in my mind.
I will not have any more of your mischief today. You insulted me in front of our parents.
Vufril scowled.
I heard her, Nonril. I promise I did. She was behind a heavy door that I could not open.
I ignored him. The music surrounding us grew louder, more discordant. I am trying to protect you, Vulfril, I thought frantically, although I still could not be sure what I was protecting him from. All I knew was that I had to get him back down to the safety of the real world. We had to leave this castle on the hill.
Why won't you believe me?
Vulfril started to pull his hand out of mine once more. This time, I yanked on his arm more harshly than I wanted to. He stumbled on the steps and fell, hitting one of his knees hard against the stone. He started to cry. I stopped and pulled him to his feet, too afraid to console him.
You heard nothing, do you hear me? I cried out. You're just a child. The kingdom of Bak isn't real. None of this is. Now stop before you cause trouble again.
Tears streamed down Vulfril's cheeks.
But you said we would always go together into the kingdom, he said. You said our stories were for us, our secrets. They are just stories for children. And perhaps you're still a child who loves his childish secrets, but I am no longer one. Now, you will grow out of this silly phase and forget about all this nonsense. Or do you want everyone to think of you as a little boy forever?
Nonsense. It was my father's word. My brother looked as if I'd slapped him. You are a child, I'd told him. And I am not. The sky outside had slowly begun to lighten again, losing its red cast, and now I could see my brother's eyes clearly. They were wet, but behind that was anger. I glanced down at his knee.
The fall had scraped a patch open on his leggings.
"Keep your own secrets," he said.
He rubbed his eyes.
"I will never tell you anything ever again. If you go back to the kingdom, go alone and never return."
With that, he yanked his hand out of mine and hurried down the stairs without me. I opened my mouth to call out to him to apologize for my outburst, but it was too late. Vuthril's cruelty descended as swiftly and fiercely as his affection. Later that night, I discovered that the pages in my music notebook had been rummaged through. When I flipped through it to the second-to-last page, where I'd written my first measures of music, my first secret, I found that the page had been ripped entirely in half. I ran my finger along the frayed edges, then clutched the notebook to my chest and wept.